You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I'm your host, Dan White. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host.
Wow.
And my guest today is the new artistic director of the UCB Los Angeles theater program, and Beth Appel, who improv fans might know from List Accomplishments, know her from Harold Knight. You know her from Maude directing. You know her from commercials. She's in a lot of commercials. You know her from Being My Friend. You know her from all around. She's amazing. She's this amazing, funny person. Beth, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. I don't know that people would know me from commercials.
You know
her
from commercials.
That's nice of you to say.
I follow, my favorite actors are all just, you know, nameless commercial actors.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
I didn't see this List Accomplishments part, so that really caught me off guard. Should we do that again? No, they're saying no. They're saying you're not allowed to do that again. Well, I've already screwed this up.
I think you're doing a great job, Dan.
Beth,
yes.
How are you?
I'm good.
So, me and Beth Appel, this is like, oh, it's just to interview someone you don't know. But I know a lot about you.
Yeah.
We go way back. Mm-hmm. We're buddies. We're pals. We're close friends. Would you say that?
It's true. I would say we're very close friends.
I would say we're very close friends.
Yes.
Well, we're now on the air, live here. We're deciding how close we are as friends. Almost best friends.
Let's not go crazy. Yeah. You're one of my best friends, Dan.
Okay, good. I need that. This is about me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, Beth. First off, you're the new artistic director of UCB Los Angeles Theater Branch. How does that, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's an amazing accomplishment, especially, I will say, not that this needs to be said, but as someone who's, you know, been around basically your entire UCB career, correct?
No.
No?
Wrong.
Well, I missed a couple of years when you were in class, no?
Yeah.
But okay, we were on our first Harold team together. That's like the start, no?
Yes, yeah. Okay.
You're not giving that the start?
No, you're right. The entire time, like, since I have been on the UCB talent page.
Yes, since you've been on the performer page,
yes.
I've been around. And
yes.
I will say that you are an extremely deserving candidate of that job. And, no, you know, not that it needs to qualifications, but I would say that, you know, congrats to you. You worked in every aspect of what UCB does, and as UCB has grown into, you know, in the writing aspect, directing, not just an improviser. And I think that you've wear a crown in every element of what UCB does. So I feel like that gives you a particularly great lens for doing that job. And so I'm excited for you to have it. And I think, I think it's awesome.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
also excited.
Are you excited?
Yeah.
You don't seem excited.
This is my general demeanor. You know that at all times. I'm really excited.
Yeah, but let's focus on improv. So what? When did you start doing improv? I know you went to Vassar.
I did go to Vassar. I did
which
not.
Is like, which is like, well, I think they just do improv all day there.
It's an improv college. I didn't get onto the improv team in college.
You did not get on?
No. I auditioned, I think, three times and never got on. And it was just called improv. So I did improv in, like, high school in Denver. I did a lot of short-form improv. And then in college, when I would go home for breaks, I would do improv in Denver.
Right.
Just short form, a thing called Comedy Jocks, which
yeah.
was just a full ripoff of Comedy,
Comedy Sports.
Sports. Yeah.
Comedy Jocks.
Comedy Jocks. We performed in the back of a pizza place. And and then I took my first class at UCB in 2004.
Right. So when did I show up on the scene? Let's make this about me.
I don't
know. That I didn't. I showed up 2007.
Yeah.
So you were 3 years. You had 3 years of UCB experience not knowing me.
Yes.
Okay, so that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so what was the jump from, short form to long form like in your when you first started doing it?
Because
I never did the short form route.
Yeah.
So I'm always fascinated by people who come from that background. Although I watched a lot of like Whose Line.
Yeah, I think it's positive and negative. Like when you take Improv 101, or when I did, I think it was called just one at that point because I'm a million years old. A lot of the stuff you do at the in the beginning classes is more short form. Like it feels more like game oriented, and so probably I just thought I was awesome, or I know I did. Like I was so confident, and then as you get further into the classes, you realize like, oh, this is not short form. I'm not as good as I thought I was.
Right.
And you have to like, I think people that start in short form, not to make a blanket statement, but my experience was like the transition out of like making jokes and like into longer scenes was really hard.
Right.
Without that, you know, every sentence starts with the next letter of the alphabet type.
Without that guide.
Yeah, well, in short form, they give you the game.
Right.
And in long form, you find the game.
And no knock on short form improv, because I've seen it kill so many times. Like, being on Torco, where the group before us does short form, and they, like, destroy arguably better than what we did. But it is, like, it is a guide. It is, like, cheating a little bit, where, you know, you can get really great at a game where it's, like, telling the same joke.
Oh, that's what, yeah, when I did short form, it would be, like, we would do the game where you get an object from the audience and you do 99 blanks walk into a bar.
Right.
And the audiences give the same suggestions. It's always bra. So
I had
my go-to 99 bra joke and
go-to.
Although I guess you could have go-tos in long form as well. Everyone has go-tos.
I find that I'll have like a clip. Like I noticed a couple shows I've been washing my hands in scenes.
Oh yeah, you just washed your hands.
I did it in a scene
times
with you. Well, that was the first one, and then I noticed if something works, my brain, I'll be like, oh, I gotta cut this out because I'm repeating it.
I do like that your go-to is just improv OCD though.
Well, I have it in real life and fake life. So improv life's called fake life. Yeah, so then you came to UCB and you said you didn't make it onto, I'm always fascinated by like rejection.
Yeah.
You know, so you didn't make it onto teams in college, onto your team in college.
I auditioned for the improv team. I auditioned for, I think, one of the sketch teams. I didn't get onto either.
Right.
And so there was a third or a second sketch team that was sort of weird and did their auditions late. And the stragglers kind of got onto that team.
Right.
Or the rejects, I guess.
So
that's all. That was the comedy that I did in college was sketch mostly.
Right. And you also didn't get onto the musical team with Anne Hathaway?
Oh, well, those were the acapella. I auditioned for all the acapella groups. I got into zero of them. Yeah, a lot of rejections.
I guess I bring that up not to be like, oh, I'm bringing up your rejections. But I do think that part of what I find interesting about you as someone who knows you is how hard you work and how resilient you are to, you know, to rejection.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Would you say that's fair or is that?
That is fair. I started in theater when I was a really little kid and I auditioned. I mean, I must have auditioned for, you know, 8 plays a year or more than that.
Right.
And I didn't, you know, I got rejected so many times. I auditioned for a bunch of colleges and in for like conservatory programs. I didn't get into any of them.
Right.
Like, yeah, no one's been rejected more than me. And I was just trained as a kid to just move on.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. And it's an awesome trait, you know, because I think about me personally, I could sometimes, there's some rejections I get where I'm like, I'm out for, I got to take like 2 weeks off comedy. You know what I mean? Like, all right, well, that hurts so bad. Like, what's the point? And I'll hear a comment that'll just stick with me. So I always admire that quality in people. So what brought you to UCB specifically?
My very cool older sister, who has introduced me to most cool things in my life. I have two very cool older sisters. One lived in New York for about 6 years before I moved there. And she first... she introduced me to a short form theater called Chicago City Limits.
Yeah.
Where I did
CLL?
CC.
Oh, CC. I've heard someone call it that.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I've never heard that.
CCL, yeah.
But it's in New York. Right. And so I did an internship there one summer because my sister clued me into it. She also introduced me to UCB. I remember I had a Bucket of Truth t-shirt in, must have been in high school. I was very cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it had like the whole quote about looking into the bucket of truth on it.
Right,
and all my friends were like, we like pop music. I was like, oh yeah, me too. Weezer. Cool. But I didn't care about that stuff.
No.
So my sister introduced me to it. I interned at the short form theater that she introduced me to. And then that same summer I took my first class at UCB.
Right. And so you're saying your experience coming into UCB, so you moved to New York, which another thing that fascinates me because I was a New Yorker.
Yeah.
You know, it is a so your experience was like you came in very confident. You were like, I'm going to slay.
I came in, from college, just cock of the walk, like here I go. And I, of course, like because of that confidence, did great in my 101 class, or I thought I did.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You were the queen of 101.
I was the queen of 101.
Who was your teacher?
John O'Donnell.
Don't know who that is.
Yeah, no one does. He was awesome.
Wow,
he also did stuff.
I'm surprised I don't know someone who was a UCB teacher.
Yeah. I think he moved to upstate New York. I don't know what he does now.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great for him.
I just lost track.
Yeah.
John, if you're out there, let us know you're okay.
Well, he's set free.
Yeah, yeah, he flew away.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
Yeah, no, so you came in, and then so then you went, so 101 was awesome. My experience at 101 was like, I came in, I was not a theater kid.
Yes.
And everyone was like a theater nerd, and from out of the state, and I was like, oh, I'm like just this like, you know, I'm like such an outsider in my own city.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh my God, I just thought that people who do theater, like who have your background, that's what good improv looks like if you're just confident.
I think in 101 that is.
Right.
And I actually think there's plenty of people whose confidence have carried them really far. Like I think that's.
Yeah. Give names, please.
Names, yeah. Let me just name 10 people who are only confident and not funny. No, I think that a lot of great people add confidence to funniness and discipline, and it just makes them insanely good.
Yeah, it's a massive part of the improv equation.
Yeah,
it's just confidence.
Yeah.
So then you went into 201.
Yes.
And that's where the shit hit the fan a little bit.
No. I still
you rocked 201.
I still thought I was great in 201. I truly don't know if I rocked it, but I did. I know at the time I was like thought that I was killing it, and like that's the point where people started making practice groups, and I got invited by like the cool kids to join the practice group.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, good. I did good job in 201.
How do you feel about that? You're just bringing up an interesting topic about it. How do you feel about when you're that young as an improviser and people start being like selective about who they're going to perform with?
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think you should be. I think you should only practice and perform with people you love practicing and performing with. I think there's something to be said for learning how to perform with people that aren't your cup of tea.
Right.
But I don't think you need to choose to do that.
Yeah.
I think you do that in class, and those are really cool skills to learn, and they'll serve you well at auditions and things like that. But I never got the concept of one person emailing the whole class and being like, let's all practice together. I don't think I ever joined a group where that was the origin of it. I only joined ones or started ones where it was, I mean, it's sort of arbitrary, but the people that did well in the class or whatever.
No, yeah, it's a valid point. I got to a place where I just realized, like, all my groups, it didn't matter what they were all just fall apart eventually.
Yeah.
So I was just like, whichever group is actually practicing, I will go. Like, I don't care who's in it. You know, I got to that point because I was like, I'm going to be on a house team, so that'll be my team.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? But I think you're totally right. If you could pull that off, it's the way to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So then when did Cocky Beth die?
Cocky Beth died, I would say in 401, Cocky Beth died. I'm trying to think. It must have been around then because I definitely cried in my 401 class.
Wow.
Very humiliating.
You cried in it? During it?
Oh, yeah.
It? During
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. While getting notes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait. Okay. This is definitely something you want to relive. if I was a professional interviewer, I'd be like, yeah, let's move on. But so I'm saying, like, the note, and were the notes, in hindsight, were they helpful notes that you needed to hear, or was
Of course. Yeah. They're all good notes. Like, right. Teachers don't give useless notes.
Were the notes, like, cut it out? like stop thinking you're great?
No. I could have used someone saying that. Actually, my friends would say that to me. Like, I remember I made my college friends and sisters and family, like, come to all of my shows. I mean, they've seen just the worst, all of the worst shows. And
I remember that because we performed a lot together, and I would remember, like, you had
people
show up.
I turned out a crowd.
You would bring, like, so many people, yeah. Like Ben Krause.
Ben
Krause. And he would always, that's a Beth's friend, our mutual friend, who would always just think, hey, you guys' shows are terrible. But I'll keep coming. I like them because you're in them.
Well, that was the thing. Like, in college, we would go see plays. We would go back to my room and just tear them apart. And so I was inviting those same people to see my improv shows. And Afterwards, I would be like, what's your honest opinion? And then I had some sketch show at one point where afterwards, either one of my sisters or a friend was like, I think you should stick to that.
Which was what?
Sketch and not improv.
Oh, wow.
So my friend sort of told me that I was not as great as I thought I was.
But that never stopped you.
No.
No, nothing's ever stopped you. which is, again, it's part of, I don't know, part of my narrative for you is that.
Yeah.
It's like that you just, like, you know, plowed through. Yeah. So I also had a thing where, like, I didn't invite people to my shows.
Uh-huh.
Because I would tell my parents, like, don't come. Until one day I started having consistently good shows, and then I was like, all right, I feel bad that no one saw that. Like, no one I know saw that. So then I would invite them. But I just remember you early on having people there.
I had
I think you had the right attitude. Like, if I watch my friend have a bad show, I don't care. It's my friend. I, like, want to be there.
Yeah. I think I went through the opposite of you, where after a while, then I was like, wait, these shows are too unpredictable to invite people to. And I stopped inviting people.
Right.
They also stopped being willing to come.
Yeah.
They were like, come on. Get a real job.
All right. So you hit this, your first valley was like 401?
Yeah. I mean, I had Chris Gethard as a teacher in 301, and it's hard to feel bad about improv when he's your teacher because he's just was such an awesome teacher.
He's arguably the best improv teacher.
He's up there for sure.
Incredible.
Yeah. So he was so great. And then, it would be hard to have a bad class with him, I think. So 401 was tough. Yeah.
And so, what specifically, like, when you hit that first bump in the road, what specifically did you need to work on? Like, what were you trying to overcome improv-wise? Which skills?
Probably jokiness would be one.
Because you were very quick. You're one of the quickest improvisers that I know with jokes. Like, I think would this be fair to say you have to hold back on something? Like, you'll have a quick retort, but you're like, it's not going to help the scene, and you have to hold back on
Oh, constantly.
Yeah.
I did a show recently where I didn't. I waited for a while, but I still said the thing, and it was a pun, and the audience was not interested in it even a little bit.
I know. It's
It was just a pun about the Quran and a core on an apple. And I waited like a minute into a scene, and then I pulled the trigger on it, and no one responded. It was just silence.
That's a lesson you'll have to keep relearning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So it was jokiness.
And I always want to call things back. I still, to this day, want to do callbacks too soon. Like, I want to start calling back immediately in shows. So, and I think that's all part of the same, like, your brain sort of moving too quickly for the show.
Right.
So that was a thing, and then
I think I had that urge a lot on Herald Night specifically.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, there's seven other people here. I don't want someone to ruin it.
Yeah,
to
I want to
use it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Because when you get to a certain level of skill, I believe that it's too many people on stage.
Yeah.
Like, you want to perform with a smaller group.
Yeah, I love a small group.
Yeah. So great. So
I think that was it. I think it was also getting over judging other people was a big thing. Because I think the time I cried was when a teacher sort of called me out on, like, being too much of a, like, well, I'm going to come into this scene because that guy's not doing a good job and I need to fix it. So that was a thing I really tried to get over. And, like, doing a scene, I think almost all the time will blame myself for a scene that goes badly, which I didn't used to be able to do.
Right.
So instead of, oh, that person didn't get what I was going for, I tried to turn it around. Well, I wasn't clear in what I was going for. So that was a thing to overcome. And then also you just, I mean, just time. You know, like, right. you just get better over right. time.
So then, those are all, I mean, I had all those things as well.
Yeah.
Specifically the control issue.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, something that I had dealt with personally. So I understand that. And that was something Chris Gethard also, like, really called me out on
yeah.
very hard.
Yeah.
So then, when did you feel good again? When did you feel like I'm good at this in the right way?
I didn't feel good again until probably a few years later when I took the all-women class, the original Suck My Dick. Yes, that Shannon O'Neill taught. And it took, that was a 12-week course. It was all women. And I don't think I was good at improv till I did that class.
Right. And so that's really interesting because I'm always curious about when women are like, we're going to have like a lady jam.
Oh boy, here we go.
I'm not going to say anything bad. don't paint me as the piece of crap that I am inside. No, I'm saying that I'm always I'm fascinated by that. As it's hard to understand as like a, you know, as like an, whatever you want, you know, an alpha male, whatever, whatever.
You are. Mm-hmm.
But I'm interested to hear that that's beneficial to you. And I'd like to explain that experience of performing with all women, what that did for you.
Well, I actually don't know if it was necessarily all women because it was very much the focus was just on, I think the class was called We Are Improvisers. And then about when we started our class show, Shannon was like, surprise, the name of the show is Suck My Dick.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Definitely when I signed up for the class, it was called We Are Improvisers, I think. I said definitely, and then I backtracked immediately. And the focus was never on, it's an all-female improv show, it was just, this is a class, and all 16 people in it happen to be women. And I think it was, I don't know if it was that it was women or that it was at that point in time in my improv life that it came. Like, I think it came, I want to say it was like 5 years in, and I think I was just ready to click in at that point in terms of, I don't know, maybe I was one of the more alpha people in that class.
Right.
And that gave me the confidence to, I would hold back on moves a lot. Like when I started to get unconfident in 401, I would think of a cool thing to do and I just wouldn't do it. And so maybe in Suck My Dick, I started to do those moves that I wanted to do more and realize that they were good ideas.
Do you think it's possible in class that men can kind of just follow that fear a little more? I don't know. This is not something I've thought out, so feel free to knock it down. Like I don't know. That like removing panicky, nervous men from the equation can go a long way for the female improviser? Or is that crazy to say?
I think removing
panicky.
So that
like, you were able to get those moves out that you would hold back on before some like asshole testosterone driven guy is just like, I'm gonna try something wacky.
I would actually say removing panicky, nervous people, period.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I think it was less that it was women and more that class fostered this, an environment of don't be panicky, everyone's going to get to do their thing.
Yeah.
And if we did this form where it was one person on stage, then two people all the way up to eight and then back down to one. And so it was like, you know what? If you were person eight in one thing, don't worry about it. Be person one through four in the next one. And so I think it was just like, calm down. Everyone will get to do it. And so I think I'm sure that class had panicky, nervous women improvisers in it, but the class taught more than being for women, just taught people to just be confident and not have to go to those panic moves. So.
Yeah, so that makes sense. Shannon's an amazing teacher and an amazing person, so that's great. I was just, so you're saying it has nothing to do with the gender issue. It was just a great class. I was just attacking it because it's interesting.
Yeah, I hesitate to have like strong opinions about like men improvise like this and women improvise like this I think that's, you know, it's not true usually. And then also it's changing rapidly.
Right.
But I guess if I had to, like, if I watched 10 jams, 8 out of 10 of them would have, I would expect more to see a male improviser tag women out a bunch of their scenes than a woman improviser who tags men out a bunch.
Right.
But I think that's changing.
Yeah. And I remember going to that lady jam in New York when they had like a token male, and I was the token male improviser.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this is like a special, they were having like the best time.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is great.
Yeah. You know? I only went to that once because it required dancing in front of other people.
Well, that was the part of it that probably.
I never went back.
Okay. So then you hit this moment where you feel confident at improv.
Yeah.
Shannon and Gethard have fixed you of your old college bullshit cocky self.
Yeah. Short form.
And it's time to be a Harold Knight performer.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen right away.
Well, I think it was my third audition in. I think when I was in Shannon's class, that was my third time auditioning, and I didn't get on a team.
It took you four times auditioning.
I got on my fourth audition, yeah.
And so how was that auditioning for Harold's process go? Because, I mean, now for the people listening, for the listeners out there, it's getting more and more competitive. It's become a process that's even difficult to have, right? It's just difficult to cast Harold Knight because there's so many people.
Mm-hmm.
How did you handle that? How did you handle that, that rejection there? I know I personally did not handle it very well.
I think I never did well enough at a callback to think I would get on. And so it didn't affect me much. Like, I did well at my auditions. I got a callback, and then I would do my callbacks, and I wouldn't nail them. And so I'd be like, darn.
Well, I watched you get on Harold Knight. We were in our callback together when you replaced, correct?
Yes, and I did I did that callback. I was like, wow, I did a really good job in that callback. I have a chance now, but I never thought that before.
Right.
There was some disappointment in myself for not doing a better job and being able to get on, but I was never like angry or upset because I didn't do a good enough job to get on a team. So it was sort of my fault.
Yeah.
Up until then.
But it's a very difficult process.
It is.
It's not like you can prepare a piece, you know, and audition. It's an improv scene with a stranger.
Yes, but I did have a lot of, this I think sort of speaks to one of my core philosophies. I think we talked about it a little bit earlier, which is do improv with people you like and trust and think are good. And comedy in general. And so I really would... for me, going into Harold auditions was never like a loosey-goosey, whatever happens kind of thing. I was pretty calculated with who I stepped out with in scenes and who I trusted. And maybe that's not the right way to go about it, but it did allow me to, I think I got...
Strategy is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I am very strategic. I was very strategic with my auditioning.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think some people were like, it's improv, whatever. And I do agree with that, but I also think...
I would always be like, what are you, dumb? Like, I would find out... one year I made a mistake where I signed up for a time slot to audition. And I knew that one of my teacher's weekend shows was that time. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, so that person won't be in there.
Well, that I never thought about who would be in the room.
So you're not as crazy as me?
I'm definitely not as crazy as you.
But in general?
Yeah. You're crazier. All right, than
this will be a separate podcast.
But like, I remember auditioning. You do warm-ups before your audition. And so you'll play like Zip Zap Zop and Badada, or in LA, as they say, Badada-da. And... Yes, LA and New York differences.
Five questions,
let's not talk about any of those. And I would watch who was good at warm-ups. And then if someone was insane at warm-ups, I would try to avoid being in an audition scene with them.
Right.
Same with callbacks. Like, if a first beat, you know, try not to be in your first beat with someone that you don't think is going to be a good scene partner.
People ask me for advice about auditioning for Harold Knight all the time.
Yeah.
And I go on full strategy mode.
I'm a full strategist.
I like strategy games.
Well.
I'm a strategy person.
Yeah. Okay, me too.
Yeah. So I think I went even further. I would try to like ask teachers when they were going to be watching Harold's.
That's
and then
crazy.
Sign up for that time slot, which I think you can't even do that anymore. Now they just like assign you your time slot.
Yeah.
Because, well, I think it definitely is crazy. But at the same token, like that process is flawed. And it's like, if my teachers are in there, I know they're going to vouch for me. These are people I paid to improvise in front of for a long period of time. I want those people to vouch for me or not vouch for me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And one time I went in and I'd never taken in the room. It was a bunch of teachers who I'd never taken. And I didn't get a call back, you know?
Did you do a great scene?
No.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. I just need to think for a second.
Because I think you can have zero friends in the room and you do a great scene, you're going to get a callback or get on a team.
Right.
Like, I don't...
I was never worried about the second round because then I get to do a Harold.
Yeah.
It was always that first round where I do a scene with a random person.
Yeah.
Where my nerves just like couldn't handle that.
Sure.
You know, but this is about you. This is not about me. So I watched your audition. It was like I walked out of there and I was like, I don't know if I'm getting on. I don't know if anyone in here is getting on, but I know Beth Appel is getting on a Herald team.
Yeah, I did a really good.
Yeah, you had
a
great
job.
And that's great. Yeah. That's a great way. So then you're on Herald Night on an amazing team with me called Monstro.
Oh, boy, yes. Monstro.
And so let's, I mean, I just think, I mean, we love Monstro.
We love Monstro.
Yeah. We still perform together, the half that's out here.
Yeah.
How was your Herald Night experience?
Real bad. I remember I got on a team and one of my improv coaches said, congratulations, it's going to be the worst time of your life. And I fully reverted back to 401 Beth. Mid, you know, not cocky, second guessing every choice I made. Mm-hmm. Really... Yeah, I remember my stomach hurting on my way to the theater every time we did a show because I just was dreading failure.
Yeah, and I saw that side of you, you know.
Oh, but I cried after our first show.
Yeah, you did cry after our first show. I don't want to just make this podcast where I call out all the times you cried. But
I cry every day.
But let's just do
fine.
It. Let's
I cry almost every day.
Well, that's because you're an emotional person.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful way to be in touch with yourself. Yeah, so look, we can get into a whole history of Monstro. I guess I would love to do that.
Let's not.
But it says here specifically,
don't talk about Monstro.
Improv approach. So, what was your approach to Herald Night when you got successful at it?
Yes. Well, my approach to Herald Night when I got successful at it was exactly my approach when I started to have fun again in classes, which was, I had an idea for a move that would make the show better, and I made it.
Right.
And I think there was such a long gap where I wasn't doing that. And then after the show, I remember constantly getting notes and thinking in my head, like, I wanted to do that, and I didn't do it.
Yeah.
And so when I, by the time I was on my third Herald team in New York, I started to do it, and it was so fun. And it wasn't moves for myself. It wasn't like, I'm going to go say my joke or do my fun character. It was like cool show moves. Like, do you remember when we did that show that was like the first beat was some sort of Disney?
The Beauty and the Beast scene?
What was that?
That was a scene that was on CAPTCHA. It was Matt Maron, Eddie Brawley.
And then you were a genie. You played a genie.
I came out as the candlestick.
Oh, I also came out as the candlestick.
Yeah. Well, you had two candlesticks.
I thought you were the wardrobe.
Unless I'm thinking about a different scene. But
no,
the scene that I'm remembering was that either Eddie or Matt Mir was the Beast, and he was being like a real jerk towards Bella.
Belle.
I'll see you when I see the live action one coming out. But I'll get revitalized. But, and then I just was the candlestick just being like, psst, hey. Like, dude, you're not going to do better. You should be nice to her.
Yes, and then I came out as a second candlestick just not knowing what was going on. It was a real, real low point for me. But then in the second beats, we were sort of floundering, and in my head...
Another Disney character.
I was like...
Flounder. See, that's the kind of thing you should hold back on stage, right? That's like an example of a joke.
No, that's a perfect improv joke. That's a perfect one.
Sorry, this is about
In my head, I remember in the second beats being like, oh, I know it would be like a really cool thing to sort of frame the show and structure it, which is like relating it again to a Disney. I think you came out in second beats as a genie at some point.
Probably.
And then we got away
from
the...
Sounds like something that we do. You came high out status?
Just a genie that could just not die and change everything in every scene. And I held back on it, and I remember our coach being like, why didn't anyone do this thing? And I had thought in my head to do it, and I just was constantly mad at myself for like that whole stretch of time that I was on teams. And then,
do you remember a moment where you did a move where you were like, you were consciously in your head, like, I want to do this move. You felt yourself hold back on it and you did it?
When I got back on?
It's, well.
Or like on my
I just
later
mean in general,
teams?
In general.
No, I don't remember. Because I just did that in every...
It's very specific.
Once I got on to Johnny Romance, my third Herald team, I just started to do that in every show. So I don't remember any specifics, but I remember... I think I used to be scared that it would ruin the show. And this is, I think, when, you know, I see practice groups, people do this a lot, where I'm like, I saw you want to make that move. Why didn't you? And, you know, you think you're going to ruin your scene partner's scene for them or the other seven people's show or your show. And I remember when I started doing it after the show, everyone was happy.
Right.
And I was like, oh, those are useful to the whole team.
Yeah.
When you do things that you think of.
Yeah. When I'm coaching, if I see someone's foot move, I'm like, I just encourage to do it.
Yeah.
Because who cares? We're like, we're practicing.
Yeah.
Try those moves. You need to try that. You need to work that muscle in practice also.
Yeah.
You know, to get it going on stage. So then you did it. And then you got cut from Harold Knight.
No. When I started to do.
We're pre then?
We're post getting back on. Like, when I started to do what I wanted to do, that was only when I got back on.
That's what I'm saying. Johnny Romance is when you get back.
Yeah. So I hesitated on everything. I did a very bad job, and then I got cut.
But so, like, getting cut, well, we don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but yeah. I'm just saying it is part of my resilience piece on you, my framing device for this podcast.
Yeah.
But it's like you had that moment, and then I just remember you got cut, which is the thing we all feared. It was.
Oh, yeah.
We all feared it, and it was what was holding us back in a lot of ways.
That's
is the fear
exactly
of being
what
cut.
It was, yeah.
And then I felt like when you got back, then we've seen the phoenix of Beth.
I've risen from the ashes,
of Beth,
for sure.
And then you've just dominated all the way through, including moving to L.A. and just immediately being placed on a Herald team and just being like someone. When I watch you improvise, I'm like, and I tell people, I go, I'm like, Beth Appel is one of the best improvisers. Like,
oh,
the funniest,
that's so nice.
Just funny, just right away.
Thank
you. So, yeah. And so when you got cut, that felt terrible, correct?
It felt terrible, but I should reiterate, I got cut, and I was like, yeah, I got cut. I was doing a bad job. And
right.
I remember our friends who got cut at the time emailing the artistic director and asking for feedback and getting the not mean emails, but really honest emails back and feeling
yeah.
really sad about it. And I just thanked Anthony for the opportunity.
Yeah.
And I never asked why I got cut because I knew, because I did a bad job. So
right.
I think that was also like, well, it's my own fault I got cut.
Right. But it was clearly like, it was clearly the best thing that ever happened into your improv, you think?
Yeah.
Taking
Suck My Dick and then getting cut were like the two big turning points.
Yeah. I think that's common for a lot of improvisers.
Yeah.
It's like I think you need that. Sometimes you need that pressure to be released.
Yeah.
You know, and that seems common. So then you came back. And then what was, like, different? Like, what was your – I don't want to say what's your approach to improv because I think it's too general of a question. But, like, how did you use that confidence in your improv?
How did I use that confidence in my improv? I don't know.
Like,
I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a tough question, but I'm trying to be specific where it's like when you just started doing those, you were just trusting yourself?
Yeah, I just trusted that what I thought might make my team look better would do it, would
right.
make them look better.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so now with your improv, like what are the couple rules that you follow now, like with improv now? Like, what are your, and you don't have to have this, but if you had like pillars
yeah.
of like, what do you do when you approach improv? Like, what's in your, you're a very trained improviser, you know,
mm-hmm.
you've taught it to people. What's in your like tool belt? That's how I always describe it.
Yeah.
Like, we've been taught a lot.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah.
We've been through a lot of teachers. You can't like keep all that as like practical improv use.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So what are the things that stuck with you? Like, what are the lessons, the quotes, the what's in your Batman utility belt of improv?
My number one main thing, and this I have two things. One thing, I've gone through crusades on both of these with the teams I've coached. One is that you should never lie. Not lying, not being coy on lying is
right.
huge. And so if I'm in a scene where someone it says, you know, Beth, did you poop on the lawn again? It's so much funnier to be like, yeah, yeah, I pooped on the lawn deny it.
Because you just want to be, you don't want coyness. You want to be speaking about the actual thing. You don't want to be withholding information.
Yeah, because the sooner you say, yes, I pooped on the lawn, is this a great example or what? The sooner you can say.
You know what's funny? All my examples are shit-based.
Yeah, what
my justification for example for justification is like, if I'm like eating shit. And I'll just be like, why are you eating shit? And they're like, because I'm hungry. It's like, it's justified, but do you have more questions? I don't know why I have more.
It's all poop stuff.
Let me
do a different one. Beth, did you put gum in your sister's hair? How about that?
Right.
You just say yes, because the sooner you say yes, the sooner you can justify it.
Exactly. And it's why did you do that?
Yeah.
Beth, why did you put gum in your sister's hair?
Oh, man. Don't make me do improv right now.
Well,
I'm
she failed.
Clock.
She doesn't have the skills.
Oh, no. All right. I'm off my
team. This is a mutiny. Did you want to?
Rude. Yeah, anyway, the sooner you do that, the sooner you can justify. And it's also gets, like, a big laugh every time. Like, I did a scene where it was based on an opening where we had established that, like, a woman was using a ladle for a mammogram or something like that. And so I came out and was like serving food with a ladle. And my scene partner said something like, you know, why does this taste weird? And and immediately I think the instinct for improvisers can be like, oh, I don't know, you know, because they know the audience knows. And so they think they can get away with that. But I just immediately said, I was rubbing the ladle all over my tits. And that's like so much more gratifying for an audience than lying, for the most part. There are obviously exceptions to every rule. So that's one.
Audiences love tits.
Audiences love. Oh, man, I did poop and tits.
That's normal because you're teaching by extreme example.
Sure. Okay,
which
good.
Which is a great tactic, which good. I use all the time.
But that's one thing, and I coached a very wonderful team called War Stories who were so funny.
War Stories, check them out on Twitter, @WarStories.
They're definitely not a team anymore. Okay, they've since disbanded. Yeah, War Stories is awesome. And so, we were doing a form where you had to get endowed with a trait by one of, you know, in sort of the opening scene of the form, each person would have to endow someone else with a trait. And the rule was you had to say yes to it. So I remember doing one scene where one of the people on the team said to another one, what are you, a train station? And the person on the team looked at me with like, do I really have to say yes to that? And I was just like, yeah. And he was like, yep, I'm a train station. And so they had to do an entire set where he was like a train station. Like he was a. But
can't you take it as metaphor though?
No.
That's part of the exercise?
Yeah. And how.
You can be like, everybody stops at me to get where they're going.
Yeah, but like, how fun is a show where someone has to be literally a train
station?
That'd
be awesome. If you're playing top of your intelligence, you can pull it off.
Yeah. So saying yes is one thing, and not in the yes and way, just saying yes to endowments and yes to. Yes to questions,
so it's
basically.
Not being coy taking gifts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I noticed that a lot too, where a lot of people they get something where it's like, when somebody gets a response that's like, hey, are you all right? And then people are like, yeah, I'm fine. And you're like, no, just be like, I'm not okay.
Yeah, I think it all goes along with fixing the problem. Like, you never want to solve a problem in a scene. You know, if someone has a cut, don't give them a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
If someone has a headache, don't give them Advil.
Right.
Because then that's basically the same as a transaction scene.
Right.
And again, a transaction scene can be very funny.
I have no
get
problem
with transaction
scenes.
Get some poop in
there.
Get some tits in there.
Yeah.
You're
some
off
poops,
to the races.
Some tits. Although I love you saying solving scenes, I love when a scene is going amazing and you're like kind of late in it, just solve it and then see what you can do next.
Yes.
It's like one of my favorite things.
I love that too. Yeah, I think that's a philosophy I've heard from a few teachers, specifically in LA, that's fun, where it's like put them in the place where they are comfortable, put that character in a place where they get what they want and then see what happens.
Yeah.
But I think you do that later.
Yeah.
You don't do it right away.
The Harold team, my coach, they were doing this amazing scene where the two people, they had this like cold war about who's going to pay the check, you know? So then it was going on. It was so funny. And they just like kept pretending to eat. And then eventually I just told someone in the back line, I was like, just pay the check for them.
Yeah.
And then they just both went like, thank you to the woman who paid it. And yeah. It was just such a funny payoff. But the scene's over.
That's the button.
Yeah, exactly. But it was just, you know, anyway, that's a separate thing. So what's another tenant? What other tenants do you have in improv?
So my other thing, and not to belabor the point, because I do know that you talked about this already in the last episode of this podcast.
Did you listen?
No.
Wow.
I haven't
you
had
just
a
said
chance.
You just said say yes to stuff. Whatever.
Okay. Sorry. Well, you're really taking me to task today.
No.
I didn't listen, but I do. I didn't know you talked about me. If I had known, obviously, I would have listened to it several times. But I think there's a little bit of a problem with justification.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I don't think we ever learned justification.
No. And it's the only thing I teach at this point. And I'm going to start running some workshops on it because I think it's insanely undertaught.
Oh, you know what I think?
Yeah.
I think it's overtaught.
Really?
What do you think
about
that, Dan? Wow. Okay, so here's how I feel about justification.
Yes.
We didn't learn it in class.
Never.
We got into our first Herald on Herald Night ever. And I remember, and I think when I was on Mod Night as well, I would get these notes that were like, you didn't justify that. And I'd be like, I don't know what that means.
I was never taught it.
I was never taught it either.
No.
So when I moved to LA and I started coaching, I remember coaching teams and trying to just get the who, what, where out a little bit more. Because I think that that's like, when you start improvising, your brain is like so clouded with rules and you can't really think clearly, and you often forget to do the who, what, where. I mean, every team forgets from time to time.
Sometimes
so
it's not even necessary.
Sometimes it's not necessary. No. But I would be coaching a team, and I would say, well, we didn't know the who, what, where of that scene. And they'd be like, well, we wanted to get to the justification. And I think we're moving past the basics occasionally a little bit to justification first. And I was like, well, I don't care about the justification before I know who you are, what you're doing, and you are. I think the other problem with justification is I'll see something super funny happen in a scene, and then I'll see a team spend 2 minutes justifying it, and we never get to see the funny thing again.
Yeah.
Like, we never get to see that person who, you know, screams every time they see a tree or whatever.
Definitely.
Not that that's the... That is the funniest scene that anyone could do, being afraid of a tree. But it's, I think there's this weird emphasis in some people's minds on justification over pattern, and I think they have to work together a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so I started taking justification out a lot when I was coaching.
Yeah.
And I would try to get teams to be like, how can you get us to laugh at the funny thing again first? And then maybe do the funny thing twice and then start to justify. I also think a lot of times you don't need a justification.
Yeah.
As you know, sometimes can just say, you know, I'm just crazy. No, don't ever do that.
God.
Don't ever do that.
The best justification of all time.
Yeah.
Was I'm just generally crazy.
That's bad. That's bad improv. But I also think...
No, but it was you were really in control of it. You knew it was bad while you were saying it.
Yeah.
That was what made it so funny.
I think it would just be so much more fun than me being like, why am I acting this way? Well, you never want to go back to your childhood. Like, that's not an act of justification.
That's why I tell people you need to be like, you are the messed up one.
Yes.
Like, I'm like, assume you have great parents.
Yeah, I think it's important to start justifications with a phrase like, I believe that blank. I think that blank, you know, like a deep-seated belief versus like an experience that led you to be this way. And I also think that justifications are so dangerous because you can justify the game out of something.
Sure.
Like, why are you like that?
I think the problem is the Herald specifically. It's like if you have a first beat where you have a pattern that's very funny and we kind of had that lightning in a bottle kind of a scene.
Yeah.
And you got to do a second one of it.
Yeah.
That sometimes can be very difficult, you know, and it could be helpful to have a justification. But I also agree with you where it's like sometimes you're just doing a scene that's just a funny pattern.
Yeah.
And then you just need to recognize that. As long as your team is on the same page, we're like, we're just going to blow this thing out.
Yeah. I think people are better on group games at doing that. Because it's not two people that are sort of like, we have to make this playable again. You know, group games are one and done for the most part.
And there's no second beat, so there's no, in the back of your mind, like, we don't have to come back to this. So there's like, all right, let's just go for this.
Sure. Unless you're me and you want to call it back immediately.
No, yeah.
But yeah, I think in Harold scenes, I'll see a really funny thing happen once and then never again. And it's so disappointing.
I find... Also, sometimes the justification is in the opening.
Yes.
You're like, oh, okay, let's say you're doing like a monologue opening and you've already said where that behavior is coming from. The idea is already cooked. It's a full-on premise.
Yeah.
And then you justify again in the scene and you don't need it because that's part of your show.
Yes. And I also think sometimes people will double justify. Like, I am so...
Dangerous.
It's so dangerous. I'm so lax on justification that someone can just say to me... you know, I believe that. What was your example earlier of a justification? I like how poop tastes.
I just say because I'm hungry.
Oh, because I'm hungry.
If you say I like how poop tastes, then I might accept that.
That would be enough of a justification for me. But then I'm like off to the races, like, let's eat more poop. But I think a lot of people, most people are a little stricter with justification than me. And so they'll do a second justification. And that's when I start to get confused as an improviser. Then I'm like, well, what are we playing? If this is true, then what else is true going to be? If it's, well, yes, I'm hungry and I like how poop tastes and I'm a performance artist who eats poop and et cetera.
No, so, it's totally valid.
Yeah.
We can talk about justification all day. I do think that like some people don't do it. I think if you're a pretty good improviser, then you might be doing it too much.
Yes.
You know? But it's a great thing to learn early on. Like, the fact that we weren't taught it seems crazy. I'm like, what were we taught? You know what I mean? I think back on my classes and I was like, what were the notes I was getting in scenes when they weren't telling me, like, I don't know why you're doing that.
Yeah. I also, they must have been saying it, but there maybe just wasn't a word for it, and so we weren't processing it correctly.
It was something I remember consciously learning on my own.
Yeah.
Being like, watching Harold, like, because, I mean, I would watch Harold Knight. I would sit there the whole Harold Knight.
Yeah.
And then think about scenes that didn't work. Those are the ones. I was, like, praying for a bad scene. So I could be like, why did this not work?
Right, yeah.
And I think I'd be like, well, because I don't know why that guy's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then it just seems like such a thin game.
It's like an empty pattern versus a justified pattern or a satisfying pattern. But I didn't learn it till it was in the context of sketch where I remember calling someone on my mod team and being like, I think I just figured something out. And at this point, I had been on mod for a few months. I wasn't on Harold yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, do I have to say why these characters did this at the beginning of the sketch? And he was like, yeah, Beth.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that would make it a lot funnier.
Right.
Hmm.
So what, all right, just to move on. Do you have any other specific approaches to improv?
I'm very rule-based and robotic improviser. I teach a version of the pattern game that I call the robot pattern game.
Right.
Where it's just really rule-oriented and there are certain numbers of things you can do.
Is it fair to say that the pattern game used to drive you crazy? I have memories of you just being like, they're doing it wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, you were like a pattern game Nazi.
Yeah. I have trouble doing pattern games with people that aren't on the same page about the pattern game as me.
Right. Which is mathy.
I like a mathy pattern
game. So
do I. I like a pattern game where when you're doing the example, like when you're in a room, so like there's hallways and rooms. Hallways are the free association. Rooms are when you come up with a funny thing and you sort of dwell on that for a bit.
Yeah.
And when you're in a room, I think there's a lot of if buts or yes buts instead of yes ands. So like Disney princesses on Skid Row, and then Disney princesses in hell, or you know, things like that, versus sticking to just the first funny thing. So I like math. I did a show two nights ago where I asked the team to make sure that we put the chairs on the back wall when we weren't using them. I like performance basics, using your upstage hand so your downstage hand doesn't block your face, facing out, keeping the stage neat and clean. And I always watch like wacky, crazy, messy improvisers with a lot of admiration because I'm just not one of them.
Yeah. Well, that's your director brain also.
Yeah.
Probably kicking in.
Yeah. And also my theater background, I think.
Yeah. So do you have any, is there anything, any other, you don't have to have any more, but do you have any more like bullet points on stuff?
I don't want to say anything else because I feel like then people are going to be like, I did that in my Herald audition and I didn't get on a team.
Oh, yeah.
And
now I guess now your words are like there's a consequence.
Yeah.
To your improv.
I guess what I'll say is I think what's fun, if it's funny, it was funny.
Yeah.
So even if it was like there were chairs willy-nilly and you did a yes but instead of a yes and.
Right.
Well, whatever. If the audience laughed, then you win.
All right. I have a question for you.
Okay.
I noticed you take the first scene a lot.
Yeah.
In shows. What that about? I have my new catchphrase.
What that about?
What that about?
I'm going to try to make that a catchphrase on all of them. I'm going to pass it on to the next one and see if what that
oh,
about
yeah,
can be in
next?
All of them. Yeah, yeah.
Right. It's gonna be boring.
What that about? I think that about me being a writer, and I think from an opening I can, or even from a one-word suggestion, I can maybe formulate a game idea a little bit more quickly mm-hmm. than other people, which is not a good or bad trait. It's just, I think people should embrace, like, if you're a first scene kind of dude, do the first scene. If it takes you two scenes to come up with an initiation based on an opening, do the third scene.
Play to your strengths, you're saying? Like, your type?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're bad at initiations, be the second person. Like,
yeah.
There's, especially on Herald, there's seven other people that could do the thing that
yeah.
they're good at. So.
I always say, like, if you're doing a scene, you're doing, like, a court scene, and you have a lawyer on the back line, like, I don't care if it's not supportive. Like, get the lawyer in there.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, play to your strengths, right? Get the, whoever's going to make the top of the intelligence of this scene.
Yeah.
Higher?
Yeah, I think people ask me a lot. They'll ask for advice like, my team it plays really quick and I have trouble getting out there. And I'll just sort of, I mean, you can work on that, surely. Yeah. But maybe just embrace that and you're the person who does slower play on your team. Or you do a tag out when you understand what's going on. Or you
yeah.
join another team. I mean, that's going back to what we said at the beginning. Like, play who you want to play with.
Right.
And play with a team where you understand your work on your weaknesses, but just exploit your strengths.
Right. Great. Yeah. So we have to wrap up, right, Alexis? We have to wrap up, unfortunately. But what's is there anything else about improv that you want to get out there? I know it's a very general question, but is there anything that like you expected to speak about that I didn't hit on that you're like the people got to know?
Well, let's see. What that about?
What that about? I'm getting very cool.
let's see. I don't think so. I mean,
we covered a lot. So
yeah, I think it for me, improv is just about doing it for long enough that you can think and do improv at the same time.
Right.
I think people get frustrated at first that they're doing those scenes where it's this beach is so beautiful. Yes, this is the most beautiful beach I've ever
yeah.
seen.
I always say that. I'm like, because you're on stage doesn't mean that you should give yourself less time to think.
Yeah.
That equation doesn't add up.
Yeah, I think people, I don't think, there's almost no way to learn it. I think it's time. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
A lot of improv classes, a lot of shows, a lot of practices to get good at it. It's so hard. Improv is so hard.
Yeah. And it takes one high pressure situation to put you back to a student.
Oh, yeah. I still have shows where afterwards I just feel awful. I don't cry anymore.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. I did a show like whatever, fairly recently where I was like, oh, I feel like a student again.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, well, and then I did really poorly.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well. That sucked. I sucked in front of people I don't want to suck in front of, but
yeah.
Hey, it happens. You know.
And I guess the other thing I would say is just take it upon yourself to not blame your teammates and your scene mates
blame
if something goes wrong. Blame the audience. Blame Obama. Blame the audience. Blame, and don't blame yourself. Just
no.
Take it and say, how could I fix that for the future?
Yeah.
Not, don't get mad at your teammates.
Yeah. And that's great. All right. So, Beth, this is the last thing I'm going to say. I keep
yes,
saying
Dan.
This is the last thing, but this is what I got time. So, how are you feeling about being artistic director?
I feel great.
You feel great about it?
Yeah.
What is, What's the question I want to ask? I want to ask you just one question.
Okay.
What is one thing people should know about you as the artistic director? Is it one thing, like, you know, like, that's going to be your approach? It doesn't need to be a big thing. Just, I don't know, anything about your, like, you, something you're thinking about or anything. Like, can we get a little insight into your brain?
I don't,
you don't have to have anything. Like, it's so on the spot. I just feel like it's my duty to be like, I got the new AD. What, you know?
I think I've already sort of said it, which probably is just, I value hard work and I value funny.
And you are a hard worker. You've worked really hard.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when people are saying, I can't get on a team and I'm, you know, people are out to get me, I think that doesn't, I understand why they feel that way, but it doesn't resonate with me because I probably had moments where I felt that way, but for the most part, my mentality has always been, okay, I got to work harder. Let me fix that. Let me fix that in myself. So,
right. Like, you follow the, like, Steve Martin be undeniable kind of philosophy?
I guess so. Probably not in those words.
You love Steve Martin, right?
Well, I do love his play Picasso at the La Panagil.
Well, that's just, that's what he's known for.
He's known for that, writing that play.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Well, Beth, congratulations again.
Thanks, Dan.
On being the artistic director, and congratulations on having a real firm belief on what you believe in. and everyone.
Dan's,
and that
Dan's
was,
picking up the outro copy.
And I love a nice laminated piece of paper. they really, nothing like it when it goes under your nails.
Oh, no, thank you.
No, thank ye. And that was a long form conversation. Tune into the next episode when Beth Appel will be your host, artistic director and host. How much power do you have? I say we, I don't know, I think the mutiny is imminent.
Oh, boy.
And I just want to thank Alexis, our engineer, and I want to thank Beth Appel, my guest. I want to thank the powers that be. I want to thank
God.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy. This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.